Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Regular listeners know that ours is not a political program. If you want politics, tune in to MSNBC or Fox News. That said, we're going to discuss presidential politics today, not to endorse a candidate or a political philosophy, liberal or conservative. Rather, we'll talk about politics as a gauge of mental health. In fact, how healthy is it for us, individually and collectively, to expect a single political figure, say our president, to really make a difference in our personal quality of life, solve all our problems for us, and improve, change our expectations for the future, good or bad. And like him or despise him, I'm certain we'd all agree that the center of media attention in this election cycle has been one Donald Trump, with his brashness, his attack on sacred cows, his promise to make America great again. He has won Republican primary elections all across America. And my guest today, psychologist Frieda Birnbaum, contends that the fact that there may be too much hope in Trump is a reflection of weakened mental health among Americans. And to be fair, one might argue that the same could have been inferred from the 2008 election of Barack Obama, based upon his somewhat nebulous promise of hope and change. And as Dr. Birnbaum puts it, when we seek an external individual of force outside ourselves to make right or to change what we are capable of changing, it is disempowering. And the sad truth is, when we depend too much on our country's leader to make things right for us, we are setting ourselves up for disappointment, whether or not he or she is elected president. If our favored candidate loses, we have a built-in excuse to blame our unhappiness or lack of success on that other party. And if elected, we become disenchanted when all the campaign promises are not kept, or if they are, we really don't notice any tremendous improvement in our personal lives. And Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, Ph.D., is here to explain this phenomenon and what it portends for America. And more importantly, she's also here to advise us, especially you ladies, that there is no such thing as midlife crisis. Personal growth and a positive attitude are possible at any age. But you and I first must be willing to make change happen, and it involves far more than attending a political rally or voting for candidate A over candidate B. And Frieda Birnbaum, Ph.D., is a research psychologist and media analyst, a highly successful psychotherapist for many years in New York City and presently in Saddle River, New Jersey. She specializes in counseling midlife women seeking to expand their options or pursue a professional career while preserving and strengthening their relationships. And she's author of the acclaimed book, What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Woman in a Relationship. And hello, Dr. Frieda, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you so much. Welcome to you, too.
Well, let's begin with the Donald Trump phenomenon that continues to baffle both the media and the establishment Republicans. How do you explain the fact that Trump appeals to such a wide audience and his popularity actually increases when he attacks sacred cows like John McCain's war record or makes these outrageous promises like making Mexico build a wall or banning all Muslim immigrants?
Well, you know, he is really speaking for a lot of people out there who are disillusioned with politics. Politics has proven itself to be continuing to be in a place where there are a lot of promises that just don't follow through. And he is saying, I'm not going by the rules. I'm doing what I think is right, and I'm going to make my own rules. And people think that is so refreshing, especially people who are oppressed in our society, who are not doing well, the working class, poor community, who just feel stuck. He's giving them hope.
Yeah, that, well, you indicate that Trump's popularity shows that America is ready for a massive fundamental change. But what type of change in America do you foresee? And will the average American be better off or worse off once this change occurs?
Well, his policy is that we've gone too global. When you give instead of helping, people expect more.
Yeah.
And then what happens with that is if they don't get it, they often get combative. And that's what's what happens, individually. In my practice, I see this a lot.
Huh.
And as well as in politics, and where when you're dealing with mass numbers of people, when people feel that they're disempowered, then there's jealousy, then there's competition, and it can get really fierce. And this is where terrorism is coming from. They feel that we have it all, and this is why he's always saying we want our country back, let's make it great again. He wants something that we used to have, a feeling of empowerment, a feeling of exclusivity that we just don't have today. So we have to come back to ourselves. We have to set boundaries, and we have to be able to know that we are people within ourselves that do not expand into other countries, and we do not have the symbolic need to explore ourselves through other people just to stay where we are. So this is what he's saying. His message is right. The way he presents his message, that's a whole different story in itself.
Yeah, that's true. Well, what does his popularity among Republican voters in all geographic areas of the country say about our America's mental health? And does the hope so many of us have invested in Trump reflect weakened mental health among Americans? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Absolutely. We are in great despair. We are disappointed, disillusioned with what is happening in our country today. And we need someone who's not a politician, someone who's an outsider, who will speak for us, not someone who will say what he needs to say to get the votes and then just continue to follow the governing rules that have been existing for years. We live in a different time, and we live in a time of terrorism. We live in a time of fear, and we need someone who's going to seem to be empowering us, and that's the message that Donald is giving.
Yeah. Well, most national polls indicate that if nominated, Donald Trump would lose handily to Hillary Clinton. I know one recent poll I saw said she was 51%, he was 39%. What do you foresee for America's mental health if Trump loses the election soundly and then goes away?
I don't know if it's going to be so different than it's been in the past. After all, she is someone who supports Obama. And she wants things to be, you know, pretty much similar, although she says that she wants change. I'm not so sure about what that means. Year laughter answers everything here, says it all. But,
well, I'm not so sure what change means for Trump either. You know, his promises are sound good, but he never goes into much detail in terms of specifics and how he get that done.
Exactly. Well, he's a master at that. He's a master in avoiding the facts.
Yeah.
So he's really good at creating confrontation, creating upheaval with the crowds around him. And as long as he can do that, and as long as he can connect to the white males who feel they have not been represented in this country, who are working, who can never get out of their ruts, and he feels that he's talking for them, that's where his votes are coming from. Will he make that difference? Will he make the changes? Well, you know, we had a president, we had Ronald Reagan and Nancy, that represented optimism. He was an actor. We had the best years with him in presidency.
So positive, though. That was the difference.
Well, that's right. Donald is angry.
Yeah.
And he's angry and he's representing the anger in this country. And this is a time that people do identify with that. But, you know, he's really a nice guy if you get to know him on a personal level. That's what people have told me as well. Yes, if he goes against Hillary, I don't know about that. I'm not so sure about what's going to happen there. But we are looking at something that we really need to look very closely at, and that is that Hillary will continue to represent politics as we know it today.
Yeah, that's for sure. But, well, what's the answer to America's declining mental health? What needs to happen to inspire each one of us to collectively look inside for strength so that we once again become empowered? I mean, what can we do, whether Trump wins or loses, to make things better individually and collectively?
Well, that's an excellent question. You know, we do feel defeated. And here, Donald Trump, who is a psychopath, and guess what? Psychopaths make the best presidents. He is strong, authoritative, confident, narcissistic, has authority. We want that. We want someone to give us the feeling that we're being protected. But the answer to your question, what can each individual do? Well, if we can help ourselves to know how to work what is going on in society today. You know, we've had economic failures. We felt defeated in our politics and what's going on abroad with terrorism. We really feel that we are losing that kind of hope. And so we need to feel more hopeful and optimistic within our own lives and what we can do and what we can control and make that difference. So one thing you can learn about Donald Trump is to have confidence and to be able to speak up, because he says the words that a lot of people don't say.
Yeah.
And so when you learn about strength and you learn about speaking up and getting your needs met, that's the first step to mental health.
That's very true. Well, Trump's popularity is very low among the millennial generation. In a March 15th USA Today article called Trump Turning Off Millennials, it reported that he trails Clinton 52% to 19% among millennials, and that preference crosses all demographic lines and racial lines. And does this indicate that millennials are more mentally healthy than us older folks? And what distinguishes them from their parents?
Well, there's something you said about that, because they are taking over the philosophy of the baby boomers.
Yeah.
And they make a lot of sense. And, you know, they're not about capitalism. That's why a lot of Bernie Sanders gets a lot of their votes.
Yes,
They're much more idealistic. They want to enjoy their lives, which is something foreign to the baby boomers, who want to, at this point in time, well, now they're all retiring, but, you know, they wanted to make sure they got that job and they got that success.
Yeah.
And millennials really want to make sure they like their boss. They don't want to get dressed up to go to work. They'd rather work on the beach with their computers 3 days a week. Not a bad deal.
No, maybe that's really an optimistic outlook on the future of not just America, but the world. Is it, you know, maybe
yes,
millennials will be more eager to cooperate with others and less, you know, all dedicated to getting ahead and me first type
Absolutely.
Attitude.
Absolutely. So we're speaking about mental health. When you know what it is that you need and you get there, then you're in a good place. I know my son, who's in his 40s, said, you know, Ma, when I retire, that's when I'll do what I really want to do.
Yeah,
I will paint and sculpture and whatever. And I said, why do you have to wait till that time?
That's so sad. There's so many people of middle age that say that. And, you know, why should you live 65 years out of your life not doing precisely what you want to do? And then who knows what your health will be like when you're in your 70s and 80s and finally have that opportunity.
Absolutely. So mental health means do it now, and don't wait for Donald or anybody else to do it for you.
Well, let's turn briefly to the area of great interest to so many women of middle age, and that's balancing career and marriage. And we often hear of the midlife crisis. Is this a stage of life that women just have to go through in their late 30s and 40s, especially for you women of middle age? Are your best years all behind you, or is growth possible after 45?
Well, as we both know the answer to that, because midlife crisis is only when you're disappointed in your life, and it could happen any time, or it could never happen.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about what middle age is today, that number does no longer applies. Middle age has been going in a different direction. Is it 50 today? Is it 60 today?
Yeah.
As people are living longer, that number keeps being redefined.
Yeah. Well, let's say you're a woman of 38 who married at 21, three kids, now preteens and teens, and you spent the past 15 years as a stay-at-home mom. I know there's a lot less of those now than there used to be percentage-wise, but you want to expand your options and consider a career outside the home, but you know you're presently unhappy and unfulfilled, but you don't know how to launch a career. Where would you start?
You know, that's such an interesting question, because I have found through the years of my practice that women in their mid-30s come to me and they're disillusioned and disappointed in their lives. They don't know why. And that is because you need both. You need to have some kind of image or success outside the home, and to find yourself and to know who you are and to express that. So that's a place.
Yeah, it's no longer a definition of the successful woman is in a good marriage.
That's right. That no longer applies. Maybe in the 50s it did.
Yeah.
But today, those double standards no longer exist. Women want to be out there and feel a sense of who they are as well.
Yeah.
And it did happen that women in their 20s would get married and forget about their goals and their potential success. And then what would happen is when the children grew older and they were no longer needed, they felt a void of who they were. You have to go back to that time. Now, it just so happens that this newer, younger generation often fulfill who they are first, and then they get married. And that may be a healthier way to go, because then it's a continuum and expression of who you are instead of never having that opportunity at all. So it is difficult to go back to that place again.
Yeah, but I guess the first thing you would need to do is, if you wanted to launch a professional career, is to decide just what you want to do or where you want to be headed, rather than just go out on the street looking for a job.
Absolutely. It's important to be educated, and hopefully that when you do get married, you're not giving all of yourself away, that you do have established a sense of who you are first, because the question you're asking is very hard to accomplish that later on. So it has changed. Women don't get married necessarily in their 20s in the school system. You'll see young mothers in their 30s more than you don't see anybody in their 20s. It's very rare. So it has changed. Women are much more college educated now. They even go for higher degrees.
Yeah, they have more education than men now, as I recall.
More education than men, are more career oriented. And then they have their families, and sometimes they even make more money than their husbands. And they do both. They work, and they have a family, and they have a relationship. And those are the happiest women who have the whole picture.
Absolutely. Well, should you feel guilty about, quote, abandoning your kids for a career? Do children where both parents work outside the home tend to suffer?
You know what? The answer is no, absolutely not. You shouldn't feel guilty, because children who have mothers who work outside the home are much more confident and happier, actually. It's the opposite of what you'd expect.
I would think that would encourage, especially girls, and when they grow up, if they saw their mothers working, they would be much more at ease having a career than if they saw their mother at home, and especially if the mother was unhappy and obviously unfulfilled.
That's exactly right. You know, my study showed that women who had mothers who were not happy at home went and had careers, so they did identify through their mothers wherever their mothers were. So the younger, newer generation are having the careers first. They don't even think about it. They don't even question about it.
Yeah.
They don't question themselves at all. It's just
what if you're middle-aged and your husband has always been the breadwinner in your family and he has always made the major financial decisions? In your experience as a psychotherapist, do husbands sometimes resent a formerly stay-at-home mom when she has a desire to launch her career? And if so, how should the wife respond?
The wife should do what she wants to do. I hate to say this to these poor guys, because what does happen eventually, either there's in the midst of this change, there's divorce, but if it endures, the marriage is better than ever. The relationship is better than ever because each person is respected in the same manner. And women then have a voice in the home. When women are successful outside the home, then inside the home, they're also more respected and they're able to make financial decisions, social decisions across the board. They're listened to. Men have a tendency not to listen to women when they feel that they're just being bothered and they don't care. But when that woman is out there and has a voice, then all of a sudden she has something to say in the house as well. So
I think in your book
difference.
You mentioned that things even improve in bed when the woman's successful like that.
Yes, it's more exciting. Yeah. Well, you know, when a woman is out there, she has all these opportunities and she has all these connections. And so she comes home and she brings excitement to the home rather than just waiting for the man to bring excitement into the home. And again, that used to be the 50s. Where it was a relationship looking for one person to have everything. And then the wife would become boring. And now there are two people bringing excitement together.
You know,
isn't that a better way to be?
When you think about it, I don't think any husband can really be happy if their wives are unfulfilled and unhappy. It's like that old high school chemical experiment where they'd put liquid in two interconnected tanks and the liquid would always settle through to a common level in both tanks, and I don't see how I could be happy all the time, you know, just fulfilling my career desires if my wife were miserable. And
well, you're a nice guy, what can I tell you? But not everybody thinks the way you do. Some people have reasons and needs. You know, there's a saying that a man marries a woman because he wants her to be the way she is, and a woman marries a man in order to change him. You know, and the problem is it's the opposite that really happens. The man stays the same and the woman changes often in the marriage as she becomes more confident. Yes, but again, you know, men have changed similar to you and they want someone also in the home that they're aware of that's also fulfilled, because the happiest relationship is when both people take turns being there for each other.
Yeah, that's true. And you can't give up all your individuality for your partner, obviously, because that doesn't work.
Yeah, that's the way, because then you're, it doesn't matter anymore. You're a non-entity to anyone, your children, your husband, and yourself.
Yeah.
It doesn't prove anything.
So well, tell us about your book, What Price Power, an in-depth study of a professional woman in a relationship. Is that book written primarily for the professional woman or for therapists who counsel them? Or can both get a benefit?
It's written about myself. It's a story that started when I was a young mother and was married at the age of 21, and I was in the supermarket. And I saw this other mother with two children, and she was very happy. And I wondered why I was discontented with my two beautiful children. So I did research on that, and I went into a program, got my PhD, did my dissertation on this, saw that women that were the happiest were androgynous, that both sides of themselves, assertiveness and feminist side. And so that you needed to develop both. And I realized that the ones that had the careers were the least guilty. Women who had to work were the most guilty. Women who stayed home with young children with less than a college degree often were the most depressed. So I did research about all this, and I did see that, I forgot your question already, but I did see that there was a reason for the way I felt, and I needed to change. I would stay stuck the rest of my life. So I did go back to school also, and I saw a huge change of the way I was treated at home. I had all kinds of opportunities I didn't have before.
So you're... relationship worked out for the better then after you...
It did work out for the better, and, you know, in the middle it was a little difficult, but in the long term, my husband is much happier because he feels that he can look at me and talk about other things than himself, other things than business, because men don't often want all the responsibility of having to be the one who's always going out there. They can have been more nurturing, have opportunities to be with their children. And, you know, the millennials now are this way. The men are with the children, you'll see. It's much more natural. It's a much healthier lifestyle.
Yes, that's one thing, a vast improvement that's taking place in this country, I think, that there is much more acceptance of that. So if a reader could take one vital message away from your book, what would it be? I guess it's fairly obvious. Go for it.
Go for it. You know, be who you are. And don't look for permission, because I never did. I went to school when women looked down at the fact there was a stigma always attached to me that you're going to school and you have kids. Are you kidding me? You know, that's not the thing to do. Now, of course, everybody does it. Everyone has careers. Every woman is out there doing her thing. And so as you go through life and you look back, you don't have to be sorry. Sorry about being uncomfortable about your age. Women have a big fear of getting older.
Yeah.
And it's the fear itself that keeps them from being in the moment. Then you look back, you see you weren't that old. So
yeah.
Just don't listen to other people's messages. It has nothing to do with you. And I think that's why Donald Trump is so much in favor, because he's not listening. And people wish that they could also just say what it is on their mind. And not have to get this approval. You know, we get approval from our parents,
yeah,
our husbands, then our kids. You know, get out of our way and let's do our own thing already.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens this fall, obviously. But where can we go to preview and purchase your book? What's the best place to do
that? Well, I'm on Amazon.com. I have another book coming out, Life Begins at 60, believe it or not.
Oh, that sounds like a good one.
It is a good one, you know. And each decade of your life, you feel it's so old. Then you look back. When you're 50, doesn't seem so old. And now I see Christie Brinkley is 60. Would you believe what she looks like? She was always gorgeous. What can I tell you? But,
yeah,
you know, you look back and you say you have to be able not to listen to the fact that you're supposed to be uncomfortable. And what happens then, you get followers. And people say, you know what, you're freeing me. I have women that I don't even know because of my book that stop me on the street and tell me their age.
Oh, that's
just because
great.
It's freeing them. It makes them feel better about themselves. But you don't need someone else to do it for you.
No.
Don't wait. There's no way to wait in life at all.
That's so great. Where you have a website where we can learn more about you. And also, what's that website address?
That's Dr., D-O-C-T-O-R, Frieda, F-R-I-E-D-A. And hopefully your listeners will be seeing me soon on The Doctors, and I'll be on The View.
Oh.
So we're looking
my
forward
wife
to
watches
that as
The
well.
Doctors all the time. She likes
good.
That program a lot.
So she'll see me, and she'll tell you what she thinks of me.
Oh, that's great. But
When I think about it,
my personal life, my financial situation, my relationships, and my happiness were very similar when George Bush was president and when Barack Obama were president, because presidents in the Congress may alter elements of your life around the fringes, marginal tax rates, the economy, but the essential elements of our lives are up to you and me. So please don't appoint Donald Trump or anyone else as surrogate CEO of you, because that's your job. But here's a suggestion. Prayerfully consider which politicians offer realistic policy proposals that will most likely benefit most all of us and have demonstrated the capacity to work together to get things done, because that's what it's really all about, isn't it? And let's treat this fall's election and our lives in general as a win-win proposition rather than get the other guy and take advantage of them, because that just doesn't work. Now, go out and enjoy your middle years, especially you ladies, whomever wins this fall's election. And thank you so much, Dr. Frieda. You have a wonderful message.
You couldn't have said it better, I'm telling you, because it really does all depend on you. And really what's going on the fringes is not going to affect you 100%. But I know you're not voting for Donald.
I don't
That's
know who
sure.
I'm voting for right now.
Well, I think I'm going to tell you that you're not. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, it's been fun talking to you.
Yes, it's been most fun, and best of success with your new book. When can we expect that that'll be coming out? And
you know, it takes such a long time. The publishers are now sending it out to the media. So I'm going to be in June, believe it, at the end of May, talking about the new book, and then I'll be, you know, going ahead and doing book signings as well at that time.
Oh, great. Maybe you can come back and tell us about it in a couple, 3 months or so. And,
absolutely.
We'd love to hear
love
about
to.
That.
Yeah,
definitely is in line with our goal
Let
for the
know,
program.
And we'll talk about who won the presidency. Well, that's much longer than that.
Yeah.
But I'd love to talk to you much earlier than that, of course.
Yeah, well, we'll be in touch then. And thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. It was fun. Thanks so
much. Be your best age. Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye-bye.
We've been talking about mental health in this fall's election. Let's talk about another mental health issue, somewhat of an issue. Who comes first in your life and mine, others or me? You know, from time to time, each one of us is confronted by conflicting emotions of enjoying life to the fullest, of thinking of me first, and of contributing time and money in service to others. Must we experience an emotional tug of war between healthy pursuit of self-interest and selfless dedication to those who share our community, our families, and our world? Must we choose one or the other? Can't we have both? Well, how's this for an answer? I contend that anyone authentically renewed in mind and spirit need not suffer from such internal conflict. In fact, as an essential component of midlife makeover, I recommend you adopt what I like to label a self-pleasing service mentality. This mindset permits a caring individual like you and me to satisfy personal aspirations, I am first, while at the same time dedicating self to the common good and to the divine presence, giving time and energy and resources. In other words, I am third. I'm so confident of success through this deal objective that I offer you the following promise. As a confident, well-rounded woman or man, renewed at middle age, you will consistently anticipate a favorable personal outcome, but you also will be more than willing to sacrifice self-interest, time, and energy in service to those around you. Here's something sad but true. Sustainable midlife transformation cannot occur in a self-absorbed vacuum. You will not positively transform your life simply by affirming and servicing your own personal needs and goals while you ignore the aspirations and well-being of everyone else. We all know that's the case. By your very nature, if you accomplish genuine success in life, you will become attuned to the hopes, desires, and needs of others around you, and without conscious effort, you soon will begin to adopt a win-win mentality. Let me ask you, how in the world will it subtract from your personal satisfaction and joy if those around you are also joyful and prosperous? Is there any reason why you can't experience life to the fullest while at the same time encouraging others to do the same? Once we regain our sense of purpose, we naturally want family, friends, and really anyone else within our spheres of influence to share our joy-filled adventure through life, because if we now feel great, we have a burning desire to spread our message of hope to those around us, to lead them in the same positive direction. No matter how hectic or revitalized lifestyles become, we will always find time and energy to serve and counsel others. Without question, as a renewed person, you will have energy to burn. There is no ethical contradiction. In fact, there is none. We accomplish favorable life balance only when we're able to combine genuine appreciation of self with unselfish service to others. First, in order to respect and serve others, we first must feel good about ourselves. Once we do feel positive about ourselves, we'll begin to care deeply about those around us. By our very nature, we'll desire to spread positive emotions to others. You and I will not sustain a positive mental outlook without personal sacrifice. Whenever our good fortune, our temporary euphoria will not last long unless we move beyond self-interest and self-possessions and begin to dedicate positive energy, time, and money in service to others. And we can never sublimate completely our desire for personal recognition, and we shouldn't try. As part of the renewal process, we affirm self-worth and cultivate our innate ability to contribute. And as we move forward in service, it's only natural that we accept positive acknowledgement from others. However, if we don't wish to publicize our own contributions, we can do so in secret or without revealing our efforts. The final result is still the same. It's up to us. If you enjoy cooking, offer to prepare meals at your church or a local homeless shelter. If you relish business planning and execution, offer to counsel disadvantaged or minority entrepreneurs seeking to start or grow their own business. If bass fishing is your passion, take underprivileged children along with you. The key is, the secret is to combining personal satisfaction with exceptional service. Volunteer only for activities which you thoroughly enjoy and are uniquely qualified to perform. By so doing, you will tap into your personal talent bank to serve others precisely your own way. In contrast, steer clear of any volunteer assignment you would struggle to accomplish or is really odious for you. You need not feel guilty turning down any project where you can't really add significant value. And if you hate number crunching, don't volunteer to serve on your church's finance committee. If you fear public speaking, do not commit to serve as master of ceremonies at the annual club benefit. That just makes sense, doesn't it? There's absolutely nothing wrong with seeking self-fulfillment at the same time you serve others. In Matthew 22:39, Jesus tells his followers to love your neighbor as yourself. We must not neglect to love self. And this doesn't mean that we should consider ourselves superior or more deserving than our neighbors or anyone else. It does mean that we can take pride in our own highly unique blend of talent and intellect and relish displaying it in service to God and to others. Once you and I bring our lives into positive emotional balance, we still must confront this perplexing issue of personal resource allocation. And as a practical guide to resource allocation, I often recommend the adoption of this worthwhile motto: enjoy and employ. The first word reminds you to enjoy what you have. Once we achieve some degree of financial security, there is absolutely no harm in kicking back and enjoying life. Don't postpone appreciation of life's pleasures until tomorrow, sacrificing for others or just putting off having a good time because tomorrow may never arrive. There's nothing wrong with material possessions so long as we enjoy using them and utilize them judiciously. We're genuinely thankful for what we have and in no way harm others, and we always keep their value in proper perspective. The second part of the motto reminds us to employ a portion of our personal resources, money, time, energy, and talents, especially your talents, in service to others. There's nothing more foolish than undermining midlife renewal through selfish hoarding. A self-absorbed, covetous individual inevitably ends up both miserable and unfulfilled. And I am certain you have learned from personal experience that the psychic reward from sharing with others is infinitely greater than positive emotions from a world full of possessions. And here's some final advice. Search your conscience, pray for guidance, consult with friends and loved ones, then allocate resources in the precise manner which your conscience tells you is right. Contribute time, energy, talent, and financial resources to worthy causes because this personal sacrifice brings you joy and inspiration, not because you have to. And remember, you need not hit a home run every time. Be on constant lookout for small opportunities to serve. Say paying a sincere compliment to a friend, offer encouragement to a child, share warm greetings with a stranger. Doesn't that make you feel great if a stranger smiles at you on the street and says hello sincerely? Over time, it will become your second nature to tune into the small, immediate needs of those around you. You and I earn our living receiving compensation from others, but we make our lives count by giving ourselves away. And to learn more about personal midlife renewal and sharing of resources, visit our website, middleagerenewal.com. In addition to my two books, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines by Roy C. Richards, I'd love to serve you as a personal midlife coach or as a speaker at your next company meeting or organization gathering. And you can learn all about that on my website, middleagerenewal.com. And thank you so much for joining us. See you next week. Now let's all go out and enjoy this beautiful springtime. From Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.